Outdoors coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Inside Outdoors from Bloomington, Indiana. And
good morning, good morning.
I'm Don Jordan, and that was Rich Reardon that just said hello, and we got another fellow with us down there. What's his name? What's your name, buddy?
Alan Bronnenberg.
He forgot for a second.
Yeah.
It's all right.
I forgot.
And Bill was going to be here, but I called and got Clarice, and he's out with the tractor trying to clear some snow out of the driveway and eventually get back to the barn. Apparently, the snow we got last night kind of messed him up. So anyway, he'll be back next week, I'm sure, because we're supposed to get some warm weather coming up.
Almost
60.
I'm ready.
Yeah. Me too. I'm sick of this. I am really sick of it.
So is my dog.
I bet. Especially couldn't help but you told me, we heard about it. Your furnace went out this week.
Yeah.
That must have been sweet when it was like 4 degrees out there.
Yeah, I woke up and I said, boy, it's feeling kind of cool. And of course, you know, you can figure it out right away when you look at the thermostat and it says 58.
Yeah.
that's
pretty balmy, actually.
That's a little balmy.
It wasn't too bad, but it was bad enough because it was going down. It was going the wrong direction, you know.
You have gas heat?
Yes.
So how was that?
And a fairly new furnace, and it turns out it was just me being stupid because I didn't replace the
filter
soon enough. I thought I'd done it in August, but then I looked in my records and I did it in April.
Oh, well, that's quite a long time.
Yeah, it's way too long. Usually I do it in the spring and fall. And then, so anyway, I called out the guys from to check out the, and I wanted to make sure that the furnace was going to be good and everything. So I didn't mind that too much. It cost me $100, but anyway, it was the filter, and he said that, but everything else is looking good. It came right back. So I'm very happy.
Well, on that filter business, depending on what, you know, there's lots of grades of filters, and some of them filter more than others. And
right.
The good ones, you got to change once a month. And I have a hard time remembering that.
Right.
I get the cheaper ones now, and I can do a couple of months on those.
Yeah, I think probably the best thing to do would do it quarterly. You know, do it about 4 times a year. It's really not that hard to do. You just zip, 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 open up the side of the furnace, and you're done. So
pretty easy.
Yeah. But easy. Also, it was 3 feet of snow on each side of the furnace, and I didn't really feel like getting out there and messing with it, so I didn't really mind paying the guy.
Nah, that was $100 well spent, I'd say.
Yeah. But I tell you, it's been pretty crazy. I got my grill out back, and my dog decides he's got this one area he's you know, forged his way through to go do his business. And he goes straight out there. Of course, I got him on a rope. And when he goes outside, and he gets it caught up in that thing every time. And I gotta put my shoes on. And sometimes I'm in my robe and crawling out. And I, man, it's just a mess out back. So I'm ready for it to melt.
You probably think that dog does that by accident.
No, yeah. He's like, I don't like this, and you're not going to like it either.
Yeah, when he gets back in, he's going around the corner where you can't see him, and he's rolling and laughing his ass off. That's what he's doing.
Well, plus, he's a long-haired dachshund, and he gets all this, the bottom of his feet get all covered with snow and ice, and as soon as I let him loose, boom, he's into my bed, so... Yeah.
Well, no wonder he's so close to the snow. I mean,
I get to have wet sheets on top of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that big snow we had on Tuesday, he was probably submarine on that.
Yeah, I had to kind of dig him out a little area to go to. And I've got this piece of wood, it's just plywood, that I brush off and then I pick it up. And then he can go in there to the grass and do his business. Is that
You're
smart? See, I'm thinking.
Grass spot for him.
Art.
A grass pizzeria.
But that lasted for about the first 3 inches, and then forget it, you know.
After that,
now he's on his own.
Yes, sir. You're on your own, dog.
We've got all electric out here. I don't have any gas. There's no gas lines out here, but there's no water either. When the fellow that we bought this off of 30-some years ago, was drilling for water before the Bedford North Lawrence Water came out here, and they drilled over 450 feet and never hit any water. Wow. The water's only 200 feet from my house, but they drilled 400 feet and didn't hit any water on the land. But what they did hit was a pocket of gas, and said that they capped that off because they didn't really have anything to do with the gas at the time. And he couldn't remember where that was. Somewhere on my property, there's a gas well that's been tapped off that nobody's done anything with. And like, here I am paying REMC electric rates when I got free gas here somewhere. I just don't know where it is.
That's helpful.
Well, you got to
get
your metal detector out.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I should do that.
Actually, the gas company guys that go around and do this stuff, they have a little detector that detects that odorant this wouldn't have odorant in it, would it? It's just not, it's untouched gas.
Right.
Yeah, it's untouched, yeah.
Oh, well, they can still sniff it out with these little.
Oh, you bet they can.
And you might be able to get a smell of it, you know?
Yep.
But of course, you have to pay them to walk around and do that.
Well, plus they'll know it's there and they'll want to get to it somehow.
Yeah, well, Valen's got title to the ground beneath his feet. It should be his.
Oh, that stopped him from getting you.
Yeah. I know that one of the local landowners down the road from me, close to the Boy Scout camp, a local surgeon in one of the valleys down there tapped into some, and he sealed it off, and he's going to be able to use his, but the gas company took him to town and said, no, we occasionally pump gas to store it into areas close to this, so you can't use that without putting a meter on it.
Right.
And they ended up going to court, and I think he ended up winning that, but there is gas out here that can be tapped into if you, I assume there's some expense into taming that and getting it where you want in the right way.
Well, the Worthington is the champion of that pumping underground.
Yeah.
Just about every farm out there on that prairie on the other side of Worthington has free gas because it was on their property when they discovered it.
And
they've also pumped it back into the empty wells, you know.
Oh, there you go.
Smart. Some of those big old houses out there have no insulation in them because they don't care how much gas they
exactly.
bring.
Exactly.
Because it's free to them all. You know? There's a few of those.
If they ever run out of gas and have to hook up to REMC, they will care.
Yeah, right. They will. Yeah, we're suffering the last few weeks. Our chimney on the wood stove clogged up.
Yeah.
So we cannot burn wood. So we were without wood stove in the four below mornings. And just glad the electricity didn't go out, or we'd have been like Arabs.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be having camel dung fires in the living room.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not very pleasant to contemplate without having a second source of heat.
Well, knowing how you love to go to Florida or at least somewhere south this time of year, I felt bad for you when it was, you know, two below, and I was thinking, man, I know his wood-burning stove is not working, and so, yeah, I'm glad we still have electricity. However, my friend, I have a real good friend that I work with in the music biz in Austin, Texas, and he's not doing too well.
Yeah.
Oh, those poor fellows down there.
He's got snow, and he had no power for 2 days. And I talked to him last night, and he said, I said, well, don't you have any other kind of heat? He's like, well, we don't really have heat here. You know,
right.
He's like, I've got some electric, you know, what do you call them?
Space heaters.
No, they're baseboard. You know, they.
Oh yeah. God, those are expensive.
Oh, and they're real expensive. And he said once in a while we'll turn them on, you know, and just kind of heat it up in the morning. But that's usually all we ever do. And so he was heading out with his granddaughter and wife to the to a hotel this morning.
Yeah. Well, I hope the pipes don't freeze. That's the big drawback on that.
Yeah.
No heat.
Yeah. Well, it's not that cold, though, really. You know, it's only about 30-something out there. I mean, it's cold enough to keep you cold inside your house. But, of course, Ted Cruz is on the case. He flew to Cancun.
Yep. Yep. He's such a stand-up guy.
Isn't he? That's just the perfect time to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the reason why I have not all that much sympathy for Texans. They keep putting that guy in office, and of course it's Trump is very popular down there.
Yeah, very.
As was Rush Limbaugh. He was very, very popular down there, and they, you know, those guys just had all the right things to say to those Texans.
Yeah.
And I'm really sorry that they're having a hard time.
Yeah.
Well, he lives in Austin, which is sort of like Bloomington for Indiana. It's that one little blue dot in the middle of red expanse. And
It absolutely is, too.
It's a beautiful place, and it's tough on everybody. I mean, they're really having some troubles. And the governor, everybody else, they're blaming, like, the Green New Deal, which isn't even happened yet.
Yeah.
So, like, somehow the Democrats came down there and messed everything up, you know.
Well, so it's wind farms is what I heard.
Yeah.
They were upset about.
Well, in our wind farms work in the winter, because what no one's telling you, of course, is that Texas did not buy any of the cold weather enhancements to their wind farms. So had they'd be working today. Because they did not, they're not working. So, you know, they got nobody to blame but themselves.
Right.
That's right. Save the Alamo.
Save the Alamo. God, I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, all right.
Do you remember when Trump wanted to do the big rally at the Alamo and he went to Alamo, Texas instead of...
Alamo, Texas. Oh, God.
He was looking for Davy Crockett.
These guys got high levels of intelligence, I tell you.
Oh man, that's funny. Well, the lake is froze all the way across, guys. I haven't seen that. I think less than a dozen times in the 31 years I've lived here. So it's I don't know how solid it is, but it's got snow on it all the way across. So
I saw a post in Lake Monroe Fishing or one of those groups saying that there was 3 inches of ice out to the deep water.
Mm.
So generally the only place that doesn't freeze is off Outhouse Point out there, you know, off Fairfax.
Right.
That's usually open, but I assume that that's iced over now, but but I don't know. You should know.
Yeah, it almost every place is froze. But here's the thing. So some of it was froze, you know, in weird, weird patterns across the lake. Mm-hmm. But there'd be like, you know, 10-acre piece that was like open water with froze all around it. Right. So, you know, I suspect that if you got to that spot that's frozen now, it's definitely not as thick as walking off of what was already froze before that. So I have no confidence in, I really would not advise anybody to go too far from shore. And no, certainly not by yourself.
Reservoirs are one of the worst places to go ice fishing, frankly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So because of the variation in the thickness of the ice.
Yeah.
Well, and I've got a lake level of, it's back to 538, and it was up quite a bit last week, if you remember. And so they're letting a lot out, which means there's a good current going on under there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to Indianapolis this morning and drove across the White River up there at Martinsville. It's high.
Yeah.
It's pretty high, actually. Not up to out-of-the-banks kind of high, but much higher than it was most of the summer.
When I went across the dam a few days ago, the tailwaters are like maybe 3 feet from the top of the ground there. So it's they're letting a lot of water out.
Well, that'll disturb the ice too, you know. That, how much water they let out or store up, it'll have, you know, especially if they store it up, because that is going to lift the ice. You know, that's going to lift the ice. And then they start letting it out, and boom, the ice comes back down, and sometimes you might be standing on that spot.
Yep.
Well, I would be.
No, I would not be. I was telling Rich before we got going here that it had been 5 or 6 years since we moved here. First time I saw it freeze, and I walked down to the water, and I had to step up from the beach onto the ice.
Right.
You could see the air pocket underneath for as far as you could see.
Yeah.
And I took about one step up there and decided this probably was not a good idea and stepped right back down.
Well, that shows you have basic mammalian intelligence.
Intelligence, fear, kind of the same thing, really, I guess.
Yeah, well, common sense. Yeah. Yeah, that sort of thing. That's one thing sometimes ice fishermen are a little short on, and especially when you're used to having thick ice, and pretty much the rules go out the window if you live up there in northern Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, you know, Ontario. Yeah. It gets cold up there.
Well, the brandy helps, doesn't it? I mean, really.
Well, I never knew anybody that was wealthy enough to buy brandy, so. It was usually PBR.
There you go.
The beer of choice up there.
Well, I think the statistics are that Wisconsin drinks something like 80-90% of the brandy sold in America.
Well, that's conceivable because they have many medicinal uses.
Has many medicinal, especially for snow snakes.
Exactly.
Well, the main one that I always heard is, you know, if you had some gastrointestinal problems and, you know, maybe you had the green apple disease, you know.
Yes.
The blackberry brandy was supposed to relieve that.
Oh, yeah.
But I found that blackberry brandy increases.
I was going to say.
increases the output. And you know,
if you've got a little diarrhea, you're not going to want to take much blackberry brandy.
I think that they were probably kidding me just to get me to get some. watch Gordon do this.
Yeah, hey, watch Don now.
Yeah, right.
That's funny.
Well, I have to give you my recipe for being sick, and that's if I get a cold, and I haven't had one in a long time, knock on wood. But in my younger days, when you got a lot of colds, blackberry brandy, it doesn't do anything for you, but it makes it so much better.
You don't care. Yeah, exactly.
And I stopped in at Big Red last week to get some blackberry brandy, and I went down the aisles looking for it, and I finally got to the DeCoopers or Kuipers, whatever it is, section that makes all those different flavored brandies. And there was peach brandy, and there was no blackberry brandy.
Oh, so,
the guy comes, elder fella came down and says, "Can I help you with something, sir?" I said, "Yeah, I'm looking for blackberry brandy." Said, "Oh, it's over on this next aisle." So they keep the blackberry brandy segregated from the mill of the run brandies. It's over there in the aisle with Tia Maria and Bailey's and that sort of thing. Because
The other medicinal alcohol.
Yes, that's right. So it's been blackberry brandy has been promoted in Indiana.
Yeah.
Don't they call it, is it Poland or Slovakia or somewhere, they call it Slivovich? Isn't that what it is?
Slivovich?
Slivovich, yeah. I think that's what blackberry brandy is over there. And listen, they swear by it.
Well, I think this that they sold me down at Big Red was actually from either Czechoslovakia, Czechoslovakia. So, you know, it's also an import, so you get that snob appeal, especially being in the good road.
Exactly. Well, so back in the 90s, when I was in the pharmaceutical industry, there was a guy from, you know, one of those places we were at war with Clinton over there back then. And because of that war, there was a shortage of Slivovitz in America. And he knew where all these Polish and Slovakian communities were all over the United States. And he says, why don't you, and we got to be friends. He says, "Why don't you go in business with me? We'll start making Slivovitz. You're a pharmacist. I mean, you know, you could get licensed and, you know, start distilling this stuff and we could make a fortune." And I'm going, okay, well, and this was way before craft distilleries and things like that. You really needed to the license alone and the people you needed to pay off to be able to do that was extraordinarily expensive. And I'm just going, you know what? I'd love to do this with you. It sounds like a ball, but you know, I just think you're not understanding how difficult this will be. Well, lo and behold, he figured out a way to do it and went off on his own and made millions selling blackberry brandy to expat Slovakian and Polish people here.
That's why you were still shuffling pills, right?
That's exactly correct.
Oh, well, too soon, old, too late, smart.
There's a reason I'm not living next to David Packard in Big Sur. It's because I didn't take that deal.
Oh, well, you didn't want to be in Big Sur anymore anyway.
You can't get out.
Did you see that on Route 1?
Yeah, I did.
Or the one, as they like to call it.
Yeah.
The
Cabrillo Highway.
Yeah.
I've driven by there many times, and you know, when you go around those corners, you just look over the edge and go, "God, that's a long way down." If you drove off the road, and I keep in contact with a couple of friends out there, and you know, because of the fires and the mudslides and all that, they had a hellish 10 years out there. It would have been very difficult to make it in big. It's always been difficult to make a living in Big Sur, but the last 10 years have been just, I don't know how some people have done it.
Isn't that the area where Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman made, was it Suspicion? Where she thinks he's going to kill him, and he takes her out to the cliff, and she's sure he's going to push her over?
Yes, and Liz Burton, Liz Taylor, and Richard Burton made a movie there. It's also where Orson Welles and Rita Hayworth lived when they were married. So it's of course where, you know, the most famous person, of course, is Henry Miller, you know, who lived there in Big Sur and wrote most of his best work there.
Well, it's a pretty place. There's no question about that. It's just, the problem is it's in California.
Yeah.
You know, when we were looking seriously to move there, you know, it wasn't going to happen because I had four kids and I had, you know, four kids in college in front of me. But you could buy a place, you know, the most beautiful property in Big Sur is David Packard's farm right there on the ocean, just near Nepenthe. It's just a gorgeous property right on the ocean. And on the other side of Highway 1, there was a property that was like 12 acres. I think it was close to $600,000, and it was buildable. And, of course, you know, I looking at a way to do that, I'm going, you know, if I didn't have four kids to put through school, you know, I'd have done that potentially and lived in a little cabin there. I recently, within the last 10 years, saw that same property sold to some dot-com billionaire for like $24 million. So there was a time when Big Sur was probably a place where the average Joe could go and live an interesting, quiet, pioneer kind of existence. Those days are long gone now.
Well, you know where you can go now. You can go to
Texas.
Eastern Europe, Texas, or the... Central America. Prices are still rock bottom down there.
Yeah.
And
maybe for quite some time.
Yeah. You know, a Westerner with a little cash saved up can live very well in Mexico or in, let's say, Nicaragua or El Salvador, Costa Rica, not so much. Yeah. Panama is the spot these days, is what I'm hearing. And, you know, people still speak English in Panama.
They do.
Yeah, because the zone was there for all those decades. And there's still a lot of American businesses and doctors, and, you know, on and on. So if you want to go to a foreign country that's really foreign and still be an American, Panama is the place to go. It's easier if you don't speak Spanish, of course. Panama is really about the only place you can go.
You know, what's interesting is you mentioned that, John, and there's a fellow by the name of Bronenberg who lives in Holland, and we're loosely related, you know, through the decades of relatives. But, you know, I was translating, you know, my Facebook posts into Dutch and sending them over. And he says, you know, it's interesting. You have flawless Dutch. And I'm going, well, I'm using... I'm using Translate from Google, you know, and he said, but you know, you don't have to do this. He says, you know, we all speak English over here.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, really? He says, yeah. He said, you could come over here and you could go to any business, talk to anyone on the street, go to Belgium, go to, you know, anywhere around here. And, you know, everyone speaks English.
Well, that's about the same any place you go in this world except China. And there's not so many English speakers. There might be now in the big cities, but at one time, nobody in that part of Asia, in Southern Asia in particular, spoke English except in India.
Yeah.
Because of the British, of course.
Well, in China, my guess is for centuries, nobody had even heard an English person speak over there, let alone knew the language.
Right.
Well, that's undoubtedly true. Although, did you happen to see the PBS special on the early Europeans that they dug up over on the on the Silk Road, going into Western China?
I did.
You did see that? Well,
yeah.
They had a guy with a woman with blonde hair, and then another guy with light brown or even red hair, maybe.
Yep.
And, they were buried with all kinds of signs of wealth. And there may have been more contact with Europe than we ever knew, which is not surprising, really.
Well, you know, I mean, crazy brave will go anywhere. And, you know, I mean, there's a certain kind of person, I'm sure, back then, as there is now, the Silk Road to China, hell yeah, get my servants and my money and let's go.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's not really surprising, I guess, you know.
Well, there's a wonderful series on either Prime or Netflix, one of those, about Marco Polo. Now, it's not the old Marco Polo story, and it's exaggerated. It's not all true.
Sure.
But, they does show the route that they had to take and the rigors of that. And the one where they crossed the desert, which is one of the last big trials of getting to China. Was almost deadly. It was deadly for half the people that crossed it. So You know, it wasn't easy.
It was deadly for every soldier that ever went that way. It was deadly for, I mean, to think about making that trip. First of all, most of those people had a hard time living in London back then, let alone get out on a donkey with a bunch of people and go the Silk Road through malaria country, through cholera, through smallpox, through diseases that, you know, we only, you know, rudely had a handle on, even in big civilized cities. Quite a daunting task. Those people were truly the crazy brave. They have, you know, my respect forever. What a ballsy thing to do.
Well, you know, they're speaking of human brashness. Probably a little trip across the Pacific Ocean to Hawaii from Indonesia or wherever the heck they came from would have been pretty daunting too. You know, that was before compasses, and they had no idea exactly as we do about magnetic north, south, east, and west. And
oh no,
we're able to read the waves on the tiniest waves and determine directions from that. And they were extremely good at observing, you talk about brave. Geez, I don't know, 7,000 miles of ocean or whatever it is. That's a long trip, buddy.
Well, I'd be lucky to hit Hawaii if I was in a boat with GPS. I mean, the fact that Captain Cook hit it in some little wooden ship with a bunch of bandits for a crew. You at least needed one guy who knew how to read stars they maybe had never seen before, use mathematics in a way that, you know, I probably couldn't do on a cocktail napkin with a slide rule. Pretty impressive stuff.
Well, the most, you know, the one that comes to mind is the most famous of those would be Captain Bligh.
Yeah.
Who was abandoned in a rowboat, basically.
Yeah.
With the guys.
On his way back to England.
And he found his way back, and they weren't dying when he got there. He did that in a rowboat with a compass. He did have a compass.
Yep.
So that's pretty astounding feat. They were at sea for something like 30 days or a ridiculous number of days. You're supposed to start dying after 7.
Yeah.
He kept them alive and got them home, even if he was a bad man.
Yeah. One mean Marine.
Became governor of Australia after that.
Oh, is that? I didn't know that.
Yes, he was. He's pretty much hailed as the best governor that ever existed and saved Australia from the Japanese and everybody else that wanted it.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
He was quite uplifted by his experience as governor there. Saved his career, I suppose.
Far out.
Yeah, Captain.
Wow, Bond. I always learn something on this show every week, every single week.
Well, we try to be an educational station.
Absolutely.
Public service and all that, eh?
Public service, yeah.
Yeah, well, what kind of public service have you got to sell us this week, Richard?
Rush Limbaugh passed away, speaking of radio, and I know we're all upset about that, but, you know, I tell you what, I posted something on Facebook, and I just was real clear, you know, I
saw that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't say anything mean about him or anything other than I decided to post some of the quotes he had through the years, which...
Some choice ones.
You know, and normally a lot of musicians have passed in this last year, and everybody's like, given their... I feel so bad, this is terrible, you know... rest in peace, things like that. I didn't get that for Limbaugh for some reason. You wouldn't believe the things people had to say about him. Mostly it was like, burn in hell.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think you're right about that.
It's unfortunate that the guy, you know, the things that he said, he was such a misogynist and...
It really is. It's a...
racist. And
unbelievable, frankly, you know, not anymore is it unbelievable. It is nowadays, it's almost expected.
Well, and he was part of that. He for 30 years, he helped to bring us to that point, you know, and
yes, he kept
he was probably the start of it.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Well, maybe not, but he certainly made it public.
I think back in the days of Aaron Burr and
right,
the guy that he shot. I think that's when it actually came to fruition, when the Constitution was written. And,
oh, okay. Well,
and all those rich white guys, you know.
Yeah. They didn't. I'm sure you go that far back. Yeah, I don't doubt that.
And it obviously goes on, you know, beyond that.
Yeah. Civil War time, yeah.
Probably back when the Egyptians were 5,000 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was plenty of prejudice to go around 5,000 years ago.
Yep.
So what you're saying is that you don't think this is going to go away?
No, it's it's another one of those primate features.
Yeah.
Xenophobia, fear of strangers. And yeah, that's been a strong evolutionary force in the creation of language, you know, and in the creation of great basketball players.
Yeah, you know? Exactly so.
On and on. So I don't believe we're going to see the end of that.
Huh.
Well, and to get off politics a little bit,
hopeful.
Which it's not going to help, but you mentioned primates, and I noticed that they lost a whole bunch of primates at the zoo in Houston.
Yeah, I saw that.
That which is
froze to death.
You know, I feel bad.
Oh, from the cold?
I'm not a big fan of zoos in general, but it's too bad they lost some chimpanzees and some other primates. And would think that they would have enough, you know, brains to save these guys. I don't know actually how that could have happened, but certainly.
Well, you know, all those animals in that zoo have low on the immune systems anyway.
Yeah, yeah, they got
no question.
The slightest thing will kill them. In Florida, when they get temperatures in the 30s, you know, low 30s, maybe high 20s,
mm-hmm.
manatees die like snowflakes falling from the sky.
So do
the big fish that come inshore, the snook and the tarpon. They come up to that shallow water. They found hundreds of those the last time this happened in Florida, thousands actually, because it was all around the coast of Florida, you know, from Cedar Key all the way up around to Daytona. The tarpon were dead.
When I had the farm, I had a lot of I built a lot of hay. I had Busch Gardens in Tampa as a customer, and took alfalfa and a special kind of hay that was high in protein down there for the giraffes, because evidently giraffes eat food in the wild that's like 40% protein. Well, we don't have anything like that growing here in America. So alfalfa is about 20% or plus protein. And I was growing some Austrian winter peas and oats, and it was about 30% protein. And I went down there, and they would take this on a regular basis. And I got used to about how often I needed to like schedule trucks to go down there. And one winter they had a cold snap, and they went through like their normal allotment of hay. And like, if it would normally last 2 months, it was like 10 days and it was gone, and they were calling again, and I just didn't have any more. So they're not used to how that works down in the South. They really are not.
No, they're definitely not. It's not part of their programming.
No.
And you can understand why. I mean,
yeah.
You don't have that doesn't happen every year. And,
no.
It's always remarkable when it does. The first year I moved to Florida permanently. Well, turns out not to be permanently.
Yeah.
It was intended to be permanently. The first 2 weeks I was there, it had 18 degrees in the morning.
Oh, jeez.
First 2 weeks I was there. And of course, granted, this was up Chiefland, Indiana, Chiefland, Florida, which is almost due west from Gainesville.
Yeah.
A little south, maybe. But anyway, that's pretty darn cold for Florida. And I would have frozen had it not been for the fact that I had a fireplace.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of pine down there, and it burns hot, you know?
It burns hot.
Yeah. Well, that's a shock when it...
Well, these little cold snaps have certainly pushed the citrus business away from both Texas and California. There's not much citrus business left in either one of those states, because I can't imagine that there's any citrus business left in Texas after this little snap. I can't imagine anything would survive after this.
Well, this is what happened in Florida. You probably know the big orange groves used to be up by Orlando.
Yep.
And they had several big winter freezes, and that drove them down to places like Frostproof Florida, which is a good name for a town, as I ever heard.
It is.
And now it's down at Cape Coral area and Fort Myers inland from there. They've been pushed all the way down there. And now there's something called greening, a fungus of some kind that has affected the orange crops. The price of oranges is going up and up and up. And a friend sent me a box of honey bells, knowing how much I would be missing them right now. A 5-pound box of honey bills, if you look it up on the Sun Harvest site, costs you nearly $70.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. You probably could have got that box for $5 or $10 when you lived down there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you don't go to Sun Harvest either. You go to the grocery corner.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
where all the fruit stands are and whatnot. And they do have those. It's amazing. They still do. But right down the road from Publix, there's your fruit stand.
I love those little southern fruit stands. Pecans when you come through Georgia. And oranges when you hit Indian River, you know, places like that. That's classic Florida stuff there.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so many of those kinds of things. The roadside artists that used to be on Highway 19 going down the Gulf Coast, you'd find everything from cypress knees carved into fantastic shapes, or paintings of the local area, just beautiful things done by some old African man.
Yeah.
And out there selling them on the side of the road for $5, you know?
Yeah.
You could buy a cypress knee as big as a tree trunk now for practically nothing, $20, you know. Of course, they've cut them all down now. They cut all the knees off, and they made that illegal. You can't do that anymore.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you can't cut cypress knees off unless you're the Forest Service or Champion Paper.
Oh, boy, there you go. Yeah, yeah, Georgia Pacific.
Yeah, that's right. Georgia Pacific owns more public land than anybody in the country. Do you know that?
Well, it used to be Prudential owned more. Well, that was just farmland. So Prudential used to be the largest owner of farmland in America. So I'm not surprised that Georgia Pacific owns the most land. No, I'm not surprised at all.
Well, they got it from sea to shining sea, and from the 49th parallel to Tijuana.
Yeah. Well, the Cook brothers didn't get to be billionaires for no reason.
Yeah, that's true. Well, let's see. Outdoors wise, man, there's been deer visiting my yard every morning looking for goodies. And I've been putting out extra stuff. You know, I put out some leftover chili that was fairly hot.
Yeah.
It was gone. And, the crows were out there eating the spaghetti.
Oh.
It was frozen. Excuse me. It was frozen in a block, and the crows are out there, wham, 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 just beating away at it, you know?
Oh, I wonder, the crows are too big to feed on the feeder, so, you know, they have to eat off the ground. I mean, so anything on the ground, these guys are going to eat.
Yes, that's right. That's what they're, and you know, they get the road. They watch the roads pretty closely.
I'll bet they do.
If there's any smashed squirrels or coons or raccoons or whatnot, they get them. They get them pretty quickly. Actually, faster than the vultures. You know,
well, they certainly get my apples in the fall before I do. That's sure.
I bet they do.
Yeah,
I bet they do. Just reminded me of a bit of woods lore. Wilderness travel war, not wilderness, I would say, but let's say out in the backcountry, getting around. One way to find a road is to look for concentrations of crows and ravens, or vultures.
Oh, sure.
Preferably all three.
And yeah.
You see that, you know that there's something human going on there.
Yeah, because they're picking it. Yeah,
that's right. They're going along there and finding the dead stuff that we've left behind.
That is a fascinating little tip.
Yeah, isn't it? Isn't it? I always thought it was kind of humorous that that's the way we find a way out.
Well, I've always thought the animals were smarter than we are, but, you know, evidently there's more proof.
Well, there was a study of vultures several years ago now where they took rancid meat and took it out in the woods and buried it under leaves and then stood back and waited to see how long it would take some animal. They were watching vultures, though. They were in particular. How long it would take vultures to find it, right? Well, in just about every case, if some other animal didn't get to it first, they would be there within 16 hours.
Yeah.
They had smelled or seen or somehow detected that that rancid meat was buried under that pile of leaves. And
yeah.
Down there within 16 hours.
You know, Don, I'd seen that somewhere.
Yeah, where?
Yeah, the sensors in their noses, their beaks, for what the people at the time, probably euphemistically, I don't think it's an actual compound, called putrescine.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, it was
you know, that
air.
Was what the study was all about, was putrescine and how far away vultures could do this. And, like, it was, like, some astounding distance that
they
could smell this from.
Miles.
Yeah, miles.
Those amazing animals.
Exactly so. Well, I'd fed the deer out back just to make sure they didn't come up to the house and eat everything up here a couple of times. But the snow finally got deep enough where whatever I was feeding them back there is covered up. And I drove out yesterday to get my tractor unstuck. I noticed that they'd like pawed all the snow off. It had to be a foot of snow to get down underneath it. So they the deer managed to get down to it. You know, even with a foot of snow on top of it.
I'm sure they could smell it. And they've been eating there, so they knew where it was.
They knew exactly, yeah.
Yeah, animals are pretty smart. I have a Carolina wren on my suet feeder just outside the window where I'm sitting right now.
Nice.
And they're one of my favorites of all time. You know, how can you not love a wren?
Yep.
They're just so busy and, you know, cute, and they have a wonderful song, and a very highly varied song, and are very, very observative.
Observant. Yeah.
Observant. Yeah. My words are getting in my way. Well, any case, we got turkey season coming up, right, Rich?
Yep. Very.
And when is that? That's May?
I have to look it up.
March? May? I know you always have those.
Yeah, right, March? I thought we were about a month away from it last time we thought about this.
Yeah, we talked about reserve hunts. Signing people up for those now.
Yeah.
We're in March.
Yeah, youth turkey starts April 17th and 18th.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then spring turkey for everyone else starts, let me see, April 21st through May 9th.
Okay.
Well, that sounds right. Sounds right. Well, boy, it seems to be a lot of turkeys around. I keep seeing pictures of them here and there with, 10 or 12 of them in people's yards.
They seem to be doing pretty good in the last few years.
Well, you got to have that dry spell in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
When they're nesting and when the babies are born.
Well, we certainly had that.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so that's good for the propagation of the species.
Yeah.
To have that dry spell. You got to have it at the right time, though, so it's not foolproof. But,
When I drive to the dam, I come up behind the dam there about a mile and a half away, and on that road that's high up out of the valley behind the tailwaters there, almost every day, if I go to town to do errands at about the same time, I see three or four turkeys crossing the road right there. They come up that big hill across the road there where those three or four little houses are along that ridge line. And, you know, just like clockwork, they're just always there.
What time of day is that?
About 1:32 o'clock
in the afternoon.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I tell you, I've been through that area. We like to drive over there now and then, and you know, go by the spillway and up through there, and I've seen them too. And there's a couple of real big ones, man. Those guys seem like they've been around a while, because one of them was standing up in front of the car, and his head was over my, you know, the front of the car. He was at least 3-4 feet tall.
Yeah, if I wouldn't have stopped, I would have bagged one. I mean, you know, I didn't need a rifle. I mean, all I needed to do is just not use my brakes, and you'd have nailed one there. I mean, like it literally is like clockwork.
Yeah.
And they come up there right next to that curve where that little farm is. And then they walk in along the ditch on the other side of the road in front of those houses. And then they go back down before you get to that steep curve that goes to the dam. You know, I've seen them do it all along there. So I don't know if they, you know, Don, do they sleep in those trees there on the side of that hill, you think, or where would they be?
Well, what I'd say, wherever direction they're coming from is where they roosted.
Okay.
You're on your way to being a turkey scouting specialist.
There you go. No charge. It's all part of the service, folks.
This is exactly outdoors. What good wild turkey hunters do, is they'd be getting out there as soon as this snow's off to see where the turkeys are roosting.
Yeah.
And once you know where they're roosting, you know where to find them at some time in the day. And so then you set the time, just like you've done, noticing these turkeys at 1:32 in the afternoon, moving about. So you sit there and wait for them to go to roost.
Well, there you go. You know, it seems like that's an activity that will lend itself to blackberry brandy. Waiting for the turkeys to come, you know.
Or mushroom hunting.
Mushroom hunting, yes.
It's a little early for mushroom hunting, probably.
But you know, we really needed this topsoil water. It was so dry for so long, and you know, this is going to melt, you know, right into the soil, I hope, because it was as dusty in the fall.
It was
at my house as it's ever been.
It was the ground was cracked.
Yeah,
it was so dry.
Yeah,
and of course, Bill says that there's no snow, there's no morels. Now I've got other guys that say it doesn't matter if the conditions are right. If it's raining and it's 54 degrees at night, you're going to have morels.
Yeah.
That's what some people's forecast is. So it all depends on the local conditions where you are. Local, that was redundant, wasn't it? It depends on local conditions, because you could get 54 and have no rain right here. Yeah,
right.
And down where you live, Alan, we could have much colder temperatures and rain.
It's true.
It's so variable. It's each little micro environment that we have around here, the generalized picture doesn't always work for us.
Well, I was
especially around the lake, I'm convinced that there's some sort of microclimate created by this body of water that just changes things here. Things are just different than they are in Bloomington.
It's just so obvious that you watch the radar maps in the summertime, and that those rainstorms come across, and they start getting close to Lake Monroe, and they split.
And they go right around it.
Go one south, and one goes north, and
Bloomington's
left. Saw the... The magician told me that we're getting low on time.
So, we are. I wanted to just say something before we, even though by Saturday, of course, we record this earlier in the week, but there's something pretty big going on in the outdoors right now, and it's about to happen in about an hour, and that is, and hopefully by Saturday we'll know a lot more about this, but NASA's Mars Perseverance rover is about to land on Mars in the next hour. It's a pretty big deal. There's apparently 60% of all the ones they've sent out there have crashed, and I didn't really realize it was that bad, but this is pretty terrible. All those guys are in terror right now watching it come down, because it's doing about 12,000 miles an hour over over Mars right now and about ready to deploy its little parachute and come down. But there's some real interesting things about it. And one of them is it's the first time they're deploying a microphone, a really nice microphone, in order to actually hear what's going on. I'm sure you won't hear much more than the wind blowing, if that, but they've got a lot of new gadgets and stuff. So I'm excited about that. And I hope by Saturday when this airs that we've got a good, another good rover running around, because the, I don't know if you've seen some of the images they've been doing with the last one, but they're, it's just incredible. In our lifetime to be able to see this, you know.
Is this rover the one that's supposed to be as big as an SUV?
Yeah, it's a big one. Yeah.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Let's hope it's back. How long does it take that signal to get from Mars back to Earth?
10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, if I hear Freebird, I'm going to be upset.
Yeah, how about this land is my land?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure somebody's got their idea, you know, that they're going to claim some of that stuff.
I'm sure they will.
We already did with a flag and two golf balls.
Right.
Yeah, there you go.
There was something I saw about I guess they landed on an asteroid recently and found out it was worth about $1 trillion, gazillion dollars. Because it had so many
The precious metals
on it.
Sounds to me like a job for Tesla. Amazon. Together they could do anything.
Nothing like a maniacal engineer and a bookseller to get together to make things happen.
Right.
I'm telling you, it's just incredible. Bezos's empire is just, and he just gave it all away to his buddy. He didn't give it away, but gave all the power up to make podcasts.
Yeah, I saw that.
Incredible.
It is incredible.
Well, there's people out there making billions of dollars on podcasts right now.
What's wrong with us?
Well, we don't have a good PR outfit.
You know, that's it too.
That's all in marketing.
It is all in marketing.
Yeah. Always is.
Listen, after 30 years in the pharmaceutical industry, trust me, guys, it is all about marketing.
Oh, we got the 60-second high sign.
Yep, so I'm hearing the music.
I want to tell everybody thanks for listening to us this morning, and I want to thank Alan and Rich for making this all possible for us to have this three-way conversation. And, I hope you have a better week next week than we all did this week. No more snow. No more snow.
No more snow. You heard it from us here. I hope when it airs on Saturday that it's a beautiful day, and it's definitely on its way out. So, anyway, thanks a bunch. Good to see you guys. And
keep your dogs warm.
We'll see y'all next week.
Bye. 10-4.
See y'all.
Arrivederci.
All right.
Bye, ciao. Guys.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.